Right now, we really wish "You're Holding It Wrong" meant a Vuvuzela and not the iPhone 4. Plus, cheeseburgers in an Apple Store line, and seriously, that's what Steve said. All this and more on episode 21 of the Nashville Tech Feed.
To the Batmobile.
Just like a crazy person.
Are you pondering what I'm pondering?
You're excited. You're feeling nimble.
You have some mighty interesting people online.
Welcome to the Nashville Tech Feed Podcast, the show where we talk music, technology, culture with a Nashville perspective with people from Nashville. Sometimes.
Most of the time.
That person there would be co-host Lucas Hendrickson.
Hello.
Greetings.
How are you surviving through? I think we have to give the fact that we've had 90 plus degree temperatures for, what is it, 97 straight days now? Do we have to give that a special name, like Sunpocalypse or something?
That would be awesome.
Every time we had, you know, every time we had snow, we gave it a new name. We should give this relentless heat wave. Although today, a cold front seems to have moved in. It's only 91 degrees as we record this at 7 o'clock.
Don't forget the big event in May, which was the Aquapalypse.
Well, that's true. We've had a lot of apocalypses this year.
We seem to have Armageddon on the mind, don't we?
It's not even 2012 yet.
No, we may not make it.
And that other person speaking is returning show host Paul Shatskin, which has an iPhone 4.
I actually have in my hot little hand here an iPhone 4 with, I might add, an elegant little case that I got today from Griffin.
Ah.
I'll give a nod there to our folks at Griffin Tech, a Nashville-based company.
Which we've had Dave Delaney on, I believe, episode 1, Lucas, wasn't it?
Yes, did we have him again at some point? I can't remember.
I think we've had him twice. You know what? I shall go check the new Nashville Feed wiki, which I'm working on, so it's not there yet. But that was a good way to introduce that.
That's true, and I went in and at least created my profile. I haven't edited my host page yet to reflect my glory and greatness. But, you know, it's there for those who wish to. For our fan who wants us to come in and clarify reality for us, basically, on what we did and did not say during these
I think that fan would be Miss Beth D. I think she's our most faithful listener.
We have some others.
We have two.
As well, but they choose to make themselves known in various fashions. But that's neither here nor there. But we do have ways in which they can communicate with us. Don't we, Dave?
Why, yes, we do, Lucas. They could call. Oh, wait, hold, wrong one. There we go.
There it is.
615-280-0505.
Really, who has an actual ringtone anymore? I mean, don't we just most of us have our phones set to vibrate all the time? Especially if you have an iPhone with its limited in onboard, you know, options for changing.
I make my own ringtones.
Is that what that buzzing is? It's my phone.
Yes, someone is actually trying to make a telephone call to you, Paul.
Then why don't they call my phone
instead of your handheld computing device?
Like Gizmo, right?
Well, speaking of phone, the first topic of today is the iPhone 4 launched last week. And by the time this goes up, it'll be 2 weeks ago.
But doesn't it feel like it launched about 6 months ago? I mean, it wasn't the actual appearing in the wild kind of a denouement, really, for people? I mean, it was.
You still there, Lucas?
God knows how long.
Oh, Lucas, you cut out on us.
Oops. Am I still there?
Yep, you're still here. Yep.
Okay, sorry. No, what I was saying was, should we go back and do an edit or something?
Yeah, we can do an edit. Post.
We'll fix it in post.
Or not.
Yeah, like some of the things in the past. No, what I was saying is, doesn't it feel like this thing has been coming? Hasn't it been on the horizon for like 6 months? the fact that it's finally out in the wild and people actually have it, and you know, we look at it and go, oh, great, and they've sold a million and a half of these suckers. It just feels like it's always been here.
It's actually, the actual number is 1.7 million, which
was
the official
number. Sold in the first couple of days?
From Thursday to Saturday.
I think
Thursday
the
0.7
were all sold at the Green Hill store.
Tell us about
that
experience.
The line went from the front of the store, down the aisle, around the corner, out the store, up Hillsborough Boulevard, down I-440, out to Dixon. And they were it was just ridiculous.
But were you serving them from the front of your house? Hold on, let me say that again. Were you serving people milk and cookies from the front door of your house because it was the end of the line?
No, but I brought a couple of people cheeseburgers.
Did you?
Yeah. I mean, I cheated. I got there about 5 in the afternoon because I just couldn't get there any earlier in the day, not that it would have made any difference. But when I got there at 5 in the afternoon, the people who were getting into the store from the front of the line had been there since noon. And wow. I had Ann with me, and we just kind of looked at each other, and it was clear immediately that she was not going to be standing on line for 5 hours. And so the only issue was whether I would be standing on line for 5 hours, and that seemed highly unlikely at the time. So I stood on line for about a half hour, long enough to befriend some people just behind me and offered to bring them some cheeseburgers, which I brought them 4 hours later.
Whoa.
So.
But this was after you having jumped through the online ordering hoops, correct?
Right. The only reason I was in the store on the day of release was because I was completely unable to place a pre-order online. Now, when I ordered the iPad, for example, I was able to place the order online, and it was delivered at my door. You remember my famous Twitter post, brown truck, brown
truck.
so that was easy. I just stayed home and waited for the brown truck. But I couldn't do that this time because the ordering system on the day of pre-order, which was, what, June 15th, was so effed up that I couldn't get an order in. I spent probably the better part of an hour trying to get an order in on that day. And I want to back up first and say that the reason I was somewhat obsessed with this was because I had really been jonesing for a new iPhone for a year. You talk about it being in release for a year or so. When the 3GS came out, I wanted one of those because its operation is so much faster than the 3G. The 3G is very kludgy. You press the button and you wait, and then you press the button again, and then it goes into some other function. It's a very clunky device compared to the processor in the 3GS. But when the 3GS came out in June of last year, and I went online to determine my eligibility, it said I would be eligible in August. So I waited patiently till August of, this is 2009, for my eligibility so I could get it for the $299. And when I went online in August to check my eligibility and go ahead and buy the phone, they said my eligibility had been pushed back to January. So when January 2010 came around, I just decided I would wait until the next iteration in June. And I've been kind of suffering with the very slow iPhone 3G in the meantime. So I was really looking forward to getting this new device because I do use it all day long. So when I went online to place my pre-order on January 15th, the ordering system was completely screwed up. Again, because of Apple's partner, AT&T, their servers to determine eligibility were completely non-functional. If you could get through to the function where it would determine your eligibility, it would break down before it would tell you. So I was struggling with that for about an hour on that June 15th day when I saw a Twitter post from somebody saying that Apple the night before had released an iPhone app for the Apple Store and that I could replace the order for my iPhone 4 using that app on the iPhone 3G. So I downloaded that app and I placed the order, but it wouldn't actually determine your eligibility. It skipped the whole eligibility issue. And all it would really do was reserve one for you at the store. So at that point, I was pretty much left with having to go to the store on the day it was released and join the multitudes to see if I could get my reserved phone.
Well, the interesting thing is there was a friend at work that his girlfriend went online and reserved one for him. He went down at 5:30 on that night and waited in line for 4 hours and found out when he was about to bring up the phone that it was $5.99.
He wasn't eligible for an upgrade.
He wasn't up for it. And the strange thing is that his contract was due in August of this year, but he wasn't eligible. But my contract isn't due till June of next year, and it says that I am eligible.
Well, that's interesting.
Well, wait a minute. Let me – is it telling – you did the whole star data or whatever it was through the phone just to check your eligibility, or was that
– Yes, I did do that, and that was – you could do that anytime prior to June 15th, and that would send you back a text message that told you that you were eligible. But it was not a protocol that was built into the ordering system that would then process your order at the upgrade eligible price.
Now,
I wonder just something that told you that you were in fact eligible for an upgrade.
Well, I wonder if that was you were eligible for an upgrade of your iPhone, or you're eligible for an upgrade according to AT&T's upgrade policies. Because that, I mean, you could probably do that same, you know, that same whatever code, whatever that's called, on any AT&T phone to check your upgrade status.
Yeah, you can.
Not just an iPhone. So I have to think that approach was...
No, if I recall, and I could probably go back and look at my messages, I think it told me that I could get an iPhone for $299.
Okay.
Or no, actually, you know what it told me? It told me I was eligible for an upgrade that would cost me $18. The substitution of one device for an older device, they actually charge you $18 to make the transfer of the account from one to the other. So I don't think it told me I was eligible for an upgrade and that they would process that upgrade for $18. It didn't tell me what the cost of the phone would be.
Right.
And I actually panicked on Monday of last week when I looked at the confirmation message that I had gotten from Apple that said that they would have one in the store for me. Because I looked at it and it said it was going to have one in the store for me for $699. So I think I called the store. I either called the store or I got an email or I called the Apple online store. Somebody explained to me that was just the sort of blanket criteria that when I actually got into the store, they would confirm or reconfirm my eligibility for the discounted upgrade. Which is in fact what happened. So they were just, when they were reserving the phone for you, they were like sidestepping all of the bottlenecks of the eligibility determination in order to just place a reservation for you so that there would be a device, a box on the back wall of the store that had your name on it. So when you showed up within the hours ascribed and told them your name, they would be able to hand you a box, which is what happened in the final analysis. But there was another interesting note there. When I was beginning to worry about whether or not they would actually have one for me on the day of delivery, I thought I'd go ahead, because I now heard that the next round of orders were taking many weeks to fulfill, I thought I'd back myself up with an online order in the store. So I went into the store online on Monday, and actually, I needed to call the store. Here's what happened. I needed to call the store first to determine if I placed an order in the store online, would that have any impact on my eligibility for an upgrade when I got to the store on Thursday? And the woman I spoke to said no, that I could go ahead and place an order online, and if I went to the store on Thursday, I would still be eligible for the upgrade. So I said, fine. Then I got ready to place the order online, and she offered to then take the order for me on the phone. And this was after I had been on hold in order to get through to the store for almost a half hour. So I said, okay, fine, I'll go ahead and I'll place the order on the phone. And at the end of the call, she tells me that I will get an email message with a link to where I need to go to confirm my acceptance of the terms and conditions of the Apple Store. So I didn't actually finish the transaction on that phone call, this backup order that I was making. So I get this email that has this link, and I click on the link, and I go to the website, and I enter my order number that came with the receipt, and it didn't work. And I tried a couple more times, and it wouldn't work. So I kept entering the order number and the zip code that it was going to be delivered to, and it wouldn't work. So I had to call the store again. And this time I was on hold for over an hour.
I saw some of those tweets.
Yeah. And then it turned out the end result of when I finally got somebody on the phone after waiting that hour in order to confirm this backup order was that there were two order numbers. And that the order number that they had sent me in my confirmation email was not the order number that I needed in order to follow up on this terms and conditions affirmation. There was some entirely different order number I had never seen. So this guy reads me the order, this other order number over the phone, and I type it in, and then sure enough, I go through the whole routine. So there went my Monday morning ordering a backup iPhone. So yeah, a little bit of OCD there.
Now that you have the Jeebus phone, is that how that goes?
The Jeebus phone?
The Jeebus phone. Oh, Jeebus, please save us. What's that from? Anyway.
Non sequitur.
Missing the reference. I mean, I'm missing it too. Jesus phone designation for the very first iPhone, so wondering, you know, what this fourth iteration means. I mean, we've gone beyond the Holy Trinity now, so I don't know
this one is Jesus and Moses and Muhammad all rolled into one.
Now are we getting into Shiva and Thor?
Yeah,
are we
Shiva, into, Thor, and Thor.
We're getting into new and different mythologies.
I am divine simply by holding this instrument in my hand. And it's a phone, too? Who knew?
Well, it could probably attract lightning, but apparently not cell phone waves. So,
yeah. Yeah, well, I haven't had any trouble making phone calls with it.
Have you tried to hold it the wrong way, like they do in the commercials, and
I have
get your
really
signal?
Not been able to discern from the stuff I've seen online what the wrong way is. And usually when I'm making phone calls with it, it's in the car, and I have it sitting in a cradle in the car, and I'm using my Bluetooth headset. I don't usually make telephone calls with the phone actually holding it to my head.
Here's what you do, Paul. Take it out of its beautiful Griffin Tech case, custom design, designed out of Nashville, made out of China. And take it out, hold it in your left hand, and where the crease is at the bottom left-hand side of the phone, just put it in the middle of your palm and connect the top antenna to the bottom one, and within a minute, you should see your signal disappear.
Okay, I'm doing that. I'm taking it out. I'm putting it in my left hand, which is not the hand that I generally use with it because I am left-handed, so I use that hand for my... I live out here in the boondocks. I don't have a signal to begin with.
See, it works.
Again, it's hard to tell the difference. Okay, I got three bars. Now I'm holding it that way. I still got three bars.
It's supposed to take about a minute to 2 minutes.
Oh, well.
Because every time it pings the antenna tower, it loses a bar. So just keep holding it in your hand and let us know happened.
And walking around and waving it at the nearest cell tower.
It's too much trouble, guys.
So was it up to your expectations? Was it worth all the trouble you went through to get?
I'd have to say that it was probably it was not worth the needing to confront my obsessive compulsive tech disorder to the extent that I had to in order to get it. But now that I have it, I am very happy with it. It feels great in my hand, and it is really very fast. The tasks that I do with it, the to-do list, for example, that I keep, whatever function I'm trying to conduct with it, it runs 10 times faster than it did with the old 3G. So
well, it's running
I'm happy with it, yeah.
It's running the same processor that's in the iPad, from what I understand.
That's what I understand, too, and the iPad's pretty fast. The iPad was much faster than the iPhone 3G. My wife has the 3GS. We got hers right after they came out, and I had watched her use it and very much craved that kind of speedy functionality in the the device that I had and had to wait a year to get it.
Okay, so you are right there in the sweet spot of where Apple hopes their customer base will be. You have the iPad, you have the latest iPhone. How do you find, you know, working those two devices into what you do on a daily basis? I mean, have you kind of bifurcated the their usage patterns for what it is that you do?
Yeah, I use the iPad for almost anything that is a reading kind or consumption kind of activity. I use the iPhone. I have a task manager on it called Remember the Milk, and I'm using it for that. And I want to hear, Dave, you mentioned using Things for iPad, and so I want to hear how that works. Mm-hmm. I use the iPhone as kind of a note taker. I'm using the iPad. I found a handwriting program. I've actually used two of them now. One was called Penultimate. And then last week, somebody showed me a program called NoteTaker HD, which I believe was written by Dan Bricklin. Does that name sound familiar?
No.
I think Dan Bricklin wrote the original VisiCalc.
Wow.
Yeah. So if I'm remembering my personalities right, that's Dan Bricklin. And so I'm using that now. So just kind of during the course of the day, I use that for making notes that I used to take in a notepad, a physical notepad. So I'd have to say that I'm still kind of getting into the habits, the different kinds of habits, like you say, the bifurcation of habits of what Jackson Miller calls the Apple Trinity, my MacBook, my iPad, and my iPhone, all of which I have sitting in front of me now. At any given time, I have three computing devices at my disposal. It's ridiculous. But here's the thing. You know, for years, I had Windows systems.
Sure.
And at least 8 or 10 times a day, I would curse to high hell that Bill Gates got to be a billionaire while I was sitting there suffering with the end result of the technology that he created, because it was so difficult and just so screwed up. And here I sit, and every piece of gear that I have at my disposal now is a joy to work with. So it's a big difference from what it was 3 years ago when I made the switch to the Apple platform, when I drank the Kool-Aid, lock, stock, and barrel. Bring me the Kool-Aid.
So a ton of stories have been coming out, especially today, now after having an entire weekend of the iPhone being out, talking about how this has been Apple's most successful product launch ever, and, you know, where do they go now? I wonder if we're going to see a season now that iPad's out of the way, iPhone's out of the way, iPod usually gets its refresh somewhere closer to Christmas. Are our beloved desktops or laptops going to see some brightening up as well in this age, or are we just going to be stuck trying to create iOS version for larger machines?
I can think of two things to answer that. One is just an observation from Anne yesterday. She has an iPad as well, and she had her laptop. She had her MacBook in her lap, and she actually reached out to the screen with her fingers to pinch. So
I've done that already.
I wouldn't rule out the possibility that technology would find its way into notebook computers.
Sure.
And so that's one possibility. The other possibility we are going to come back to, especially when you mention that the fall is when they do their iPod refreshes, we come back to the question of which we've debated, which horse has been dead and buried 100 times. What are they going to do with the team from LaLa.com, and are they going to be able to catch up with the services that are already moving music into the cloud?
Yeah.
I think that has the potential. Maybe not to be a people standing online for 11 hours to get a device kind of thing, but I do think it has the potential to be as disruptive as anything that Apple technology has done in the last 10 years.
Well, here's my first thought. Paul, check out Air Display for the iPad that extends your desktop to your iPad and takes advantage of the touchscreen capabilities.
AirPad. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Oh, no, Air Display.
Air Display. I think I just read about that.
Yeah. Second of all, I had read or listened to somewhere in a podcast that the talk is that Steve Jobs wants to move all the Macs to the iOS and get rid of the Mac OS because he can control it even further, the environment, than he does already. One of the ideas of, I'm going to throw this out here and you guys can discuss, where the computer is an instant boot. So it's got a version of iOS on it that just turns on instantly for music, TV, whatever. And then to boot up into the regular system, that starts you off, and then the other system boots in the background while you're doing other things. Thoughts?
I think when I first picked up the iPhone 3 years ago now, and saw that you could do a lot of the kinds of things, like just email, for example, that it took a whole long boot to do with something that booted instantly, I think that we could see that that handwriting is on the wall. We're seeing much more functionality built into much more scaled-down operating systems, so it makes sense to me that that's the direction that things are going to go. Over what time period we would see a hard drive? Remember that the operating systems that we're dealing with, they stem from the original DOS, which was a disk operating system. These are all, you go to Windows and the Mac OS, they are all ways that the software interfaces with the storage device, which is the disk operating system. So when you take the disk out of the equation, as the iPhone and the iPad do, then you have the potential to really scale down the whole operating system. So I would concur with that line of speculation.
But are we to the point yet? So that this necessarily means that the next wave of devices with full display, full keyboard, touchscreen input, that plus a touchpad kind of input, that line of thinking would make one say that they're going to move to SSDs as opposed to hard drives. But has that technology dropped in price, increased in capacity enough yet to be able to keep a line of MacBooks and MacBook Pros at a price point acceptable to a pretty, you know, ingrained user base now?
Well, it hasn't yet, but what time frame are we talking about? It was not so long ago that 32 gigs of memory was an unimaginable amount of memory. 64 sure. gigs was twice unimaginable. And now that's what you get in a device that you can hold in the palm of your hand.
Right.
So,
but for a user base that is expecting 500 gigs plus in a laptop, then we're not even close to that yet as far as price and affordability.
Well, what's your time frame yet?
Well, I mean, it depends on what Steve and company's, intent on iOS, what they want that to be.
Yeah, well, the thing I would take issue with is Dave's statement that the impetus for that kind of thrust is so that they can control everything. Now, maybe it's because I have, in fact, drunk all the Kool-Aid. I don't see diabolical intent in Apple's ability to control their entire marketplace. I don't see them coming to the office in the morning and say, okay, what can we do today to control the entire marketplace?
Right.
In my experience, remember, I've got almost 30 years in the CPM, DOS, and Windows environment. And so when I changed in the summer of 2007 to the Mac environment, it was like, why did it take so long? So I'm grateful for an environment where I don't have to spend any portion of my day worrying about viruses or fragmented disks or any of the management stuff that I had to just deal with in order to keep a Windows system running.
Sure.
So if that means that I'm living in a what people like to call a walled garden or a controlled universe, I'm okay with that because I paid the price for many years of slamming tables because things just wouldn't work.
Sure. But when you talk about how much is there a difference between what you want to do and are able to accomplish with your iDevices and the laptop experience? I mean, in now trifurcating your computer usage, I'm a little less, I'm the only one on this that doesn't have an iPad yet.
Luddite.
This is absolutely true. But I have one set of expectations for what my iPhone can and will do and how I will get new content and new applications for it. And my laptop experience is completely different, and a desktop experience is completely different. I don't want to go through iTunes to get a new piece of software for a laptop or desktop. I don't want to have to walk through those environments. I don't want to have to be so dependent upon the powers that be at an iTunes store to be able to do that. So I'm less inclined to be excited about that much of a walled off ecosystem for laptop experience, but I'm all for it for iPhone, iPad, because I know that the way that's set up, those devices will work.
Well, I agree. The laptops are clearly a much more robust environment and experience, and somewhat more open source because you can go anywhere on the web and download a program for it. I'm not in any hurry to surrender that capability, but the only reason that I do a lot of things that I'm still doing on the laptop that I might be doing on the iPad is because the typing on the iPad is still a little clumsy. I find myself correcting all the time. Lord knows what would happen if I got one of those detachable keyboards and started using that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But doesn't that defeat the purpose?
Pretty much, yeah.
So we're pretty much in agreement that we like the experience when it's on a portable device. Really, a laptop is not in that category anymore, is it?
Steve would have you believe otherwise if you remember the keynote introducing the iPad. He lumped MacBooks firmly into the mobile device category. So, you know, it wouldn't be surprising. And I can't remember exactly where I saw some story over the past few days talking about how they kind of wanted to lump all the operating systems, including macOS, under the iOS banner. So, you know, whether that means a full touchscreen capable, full keyboard attached, you know, laptop situation, I don't know. But, I mean, clearly that's the direction this company seems to want to head. I don't know if you remember the iPhone list. The iPhone announcement. I don't remember the words Mac, Macintosh, or PC used in that speech at all. Not once. So clearly Apple's, you know, certainly pointing in that direction.
Well, I think what they were talking about is that there's technically going to be two events every year now. That the developer conference, even though everything that they were pushing towards was a developer conference for the iOS, there's talk of another conference just specifically for the macOS. And splitting that because they don't do anything in January anymore except for just an introduction or an intro press conference for whatever new device that comes out in June.
Right.
I don't think they're ready.
It really depends on what they knew that they knew that the eyes of the tech world were going to be focused, you know, on Las Vegas, on the West Coast for CES first, and then the revamped Macworld second. So they, you know, they dropped the iPad announcement in the middle of those two to be able to get as much mainstream play as they possibly could. Whether or not they keep that, will they keep that schedule up next year? Who knows? I don't think they need to. Obviously, you know, I said this before. They could say they could rent a flatbed pickup and say Steve's going to be parked here in this Best Buy parking lot at X time, and you'd have 5,000 people and their equal number of Wi-Fi hotspots there to cover every word that he said.
Well, I don't think we're in any danger of seeing the laptop abandoned as a platform in 5 years. Even, you know, we're kind of having the conversation. We're anticipating the conversation that was held a number of years ago when Apple stopped shipping, I guess it was the iMac, they stopped shipping machines with floppy disk drives.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're trying to look at sometime in the future, will they stop shipping computers with hard drives at all? I think your point is well taken that the technology of the solid-state disk drives is still too costly to be able to have the kind of capacity that we now expect, the half a terabyte that we carry around with us every day in that kind of format. So it may be a while, if ever, before we see that particular form of abandonment. But we're going to see a lot more integration of these kinds of technologies on various kinds of devices.
Yeah,
fair enough.
And then the other thing I think that the iPad represents that we haven't talked about that we alluded to a little bit earlier is the movement of content to storage in the cloud. And I think that really is what the one of the big breakthroughs of the iPad is, that we're getting much more accustomed to having content in a very conveniently retrieved manner that's stored not on a hard drive.
Yeah.
So it may very well be that at some point in the future, we don't need 500 gigabytes of our own because so much is being stored in the cloud. That might be the mitigating factor in what I said a moment ago, that we're so accustomed to having a half a gigabyte under our arm. We may not need a half a gigabyte anymore. 64, 32 might be enough if everything else is stored in the cloud. Of course, that presumes constant high-speed access, and that's not always the case yet. You know, I've been reading how America is behind all the rest of the world in really reliable, fast broadband access. How that happened, I have no idea, but that's the story.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, they're not – most of those other countries aren't trying to cover the same sort of landmass or, service the same amount of shareholder expectation that most American companies are. So that's the thing I think that is that's keeping us from truly having that completely cloud-based experience. Although obviously there are a number of companies, there are a number of applications that are, especially on the iPad, that are doing it well from what I understand. Yeah. Again, I don't have I don't have one, but the Netflix player, the ABC player, Pandora. I'm trying to think what else.
I can add to that I had a very satisfying cloud-based delivery experience while I was driving from Nashville to visit my brother in Chevy Chase, Maryland. And I guess I was outside of Roanoke, Virginia. I mean, I was well away from any 3G tower. And I was using the RDO iPhone app, and it was an Edge Net signal. I wasn't getting a 3G signal, and the reception was flawless.
Wow!
And that's how I became. I mentioned in the show notes that I've been enjoying the Dirks Bentley Up on the Ridge bluegrass tinged album.
Sure.
And that's where I heard it. Was out on the road somewhere in Western Virginia, miles away from anything other than an edge quality tower, and the delivery was totally satisfactory.
So have you subscribed to RDO?
Yeah, I have a subscription. In order to get the mobile app, you have to take the subscription. And maybe the last time we spoke, I had just taken a subscription with Mog.com.
Correct.
And I actually, now I think I made the mistake of taking their 6 months for $25 instead of $5 a month, because I shortly thereafter got the invitation, thank you, Lucas,
sure,
for RDO. And because I knew I was going on this trip and that I could have access to my collection from my mobile device if I went ahead and subscribed to the service, which is $10 a month, I went ahead and I took the subscription. And it worked great.
Now, have you gone through and done any of the syncing that application will do, where it will actually grab offline versions of certain songs?
You know, yeah, I have. I have one album, I think Daryl Scott's album, which I'm sorry to say I have not listened to in its entirety yet. That one I went ahead and just tested the function, mm-hmm, and it worked very, very smoothly. And again, remember, this was with my older iPhone, the 3G.
Okay.
It all worked very smoothly. So I have Daryl's album actually in storage in my library on the phone.
Right.
And Dirk's album I have only the cloud access to, and they both worked equally well.
That's interesting.
So how much of my hard drive, you know, talking about that 500 gigs, I have about 60 or 80 gigs of music on my hard drives. So if I don't need to store that stuff anymore, there goes a lot of that storage. And then, Dave, that suggestion that you made earlier that maybe they're going to move away from the Mac OS and the iOS is going to become the primary operating system, I think that's entirely possible.
But again, it goes to those ideas that we've talked about before of, A, how dependent do you want to be on having a constant data access? B, these companies do go out of business or get snapped up or whatever, and there goes your investment or your expectation or your time already spent kind of working that application into your life.
All the more reason I've already bellied up to the iTunes in the cloud bar. Serve me the Kool-Aid.
Exactly. So, you know, I go back and forth on this. I do appreciate having my catalog and stuff that I'm interested in potentially listening to available to me quickly. But at the same time, I want to know that I've got a reliable backup. And if it's sitting on a plastic disc in my living room, that's my reliable backup. So I just, music is more important to me than that to truly trust any company to be sure that they have that in the cloud at all times.
I have no antidote to that dilemma.
Yeah, I don't either.
all I can say is that even with the loss of Lala, here's the thing, and this may be the larger cultural issue that we're running up against now, is that the devotion to certain kinds of cultural content is becoming much more temporal and ephemeral. I don't feel that compulsion to have possession of things as much as I might have, like when I was a teenager, those many years ago. It's like, it's enough for me to be able to hear Dirk Bentley's album and to have the experience of it, because it's only in rare cases that I'm then going to want to hear it again, or that it's going to become such a pillar of my existence that I have to have it if I get stranded on a desert island.
Sure.
Much more enamored with the idea that I can hear so much more, that I can readily go from listening to Dirk Bentley to listening to Daryl Scott to listening to the latest Noah and the Whale album that I listened to via RDO the other day that I didn't care for as much and will probably not want to listen to again.
Sure.
I liked their first album, listened to it many times, but not much since I was first exposed to it. Second album, got three or four tunes into it. It was just too damn mournful for my taste. Yeah, and they said right there, it's all about this guy's breakup with his girlfriend. And I'm like, well, okay, fine. I didn't need to suffer that entire experience along with them, more than three or four songs.
Sure.
So the ability to have the exposure to that and decide that I don't need that in my ongoing cultural palette, to me, is more valuable than the fact that I know I have it on the shelf and can listen to it whenever I want. And I think there is some kind of cultural sea change there that we're just in the middle of, and you and I have just expressed the two sides of that cusp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there's room for both of those sides in the whatever modern day form the music business is going to take, because there are going to be those consumers who want the physical product. More and more of them, you know, hopefully and thankfully moving towards vinyl, but you know, because there is that totemistic idea about those kinds of things, and you'll have to have audio files, and you have to have people that will help drive those conversations. And at the other end of this of the spectrum, people who just want their access, they want it quickly, they want it for free, or cheap, preferably free. And then there's, you know, the mainstream fan in between. So,
well, the big issue for the industry, I think, is long range, that there's going to be more gravitation toward this model that we're seeing now, where for $10 a month, $120 a year, I can have all the music I need to listen to. And rather than needing to, and that's, you know, how many, that's eight, the equivalent of eight CDs, mm-hmm. I think, or 12 if the price point is now 10. So that's a challenge to the industry. I heard Scott Borchetta say the other day, my business cannot survive on a $6 CD. So he better be looking around in his drawer for what his business is going to survive on.
I think they're all looking around, and they're not finding any answers yet.
Nope.
It's a bigger question than we have time for.
Or the ability to answer.
Yeah. Well, I was going to try to transition into the electronic people meters from Arbitron in Nashville, but I think we might have to push that to next week, and because we just had such an amazing conversation today that we've used up all of our time.
Well, I think it's a great thing. Well,
okay, we'll save that for the next one.
Yeah. Let's get somebody who might actually, you know something about this stuff.
And then have we had the debate that I referenced to in the show notes about the performance, the broadcast performance royalty?
We haven't had that debate.
We haven't.
That would be an interesting debate to have sometime.
Let me push that to the next show.
It's part and parcel of the whole people meter thing. And the fact that the broadcast industry is resisting what the rest of the world has been doing for many years, and that's paying royalties for the use of recorded music in addition to the underwriting song.
Yeah, that's definitely a topic that they go hand in hand. And we'll push it. But right now, my iPad wants to speak something.
Support the Nashville Tech Feed and visit our affiliate site, 5.com. NashvilleTechFeed.com/site5.
That was your iPad?
That was my iPad.
You have a voice to text, a text to voice conversion program on your iPad?
Yeah, I geeked out and bought it. It was like on sale for like $2.
Wow.
It'll actually take, and you can dump like full, like chunks of text from your web browser, and it'll actually dump it out to an audio file, and then you can download it to your iPod.
Now that is lazy. I still read.
What's this reading you speak of?
What is this reading? I don't use my phone to make phone calls, but I do still read off my screens.
I'm waiting for Amazon to put it into the Kindle where the book will read it to you. They took it out for the iPad and everything except for the Kindle version.
Apparently the publisher had an issue with that.
What?
Because it was eating into their audiobook sales.
Mm-hmm.
I still like the audiobook better because you just can't get the same narration. You just heard
Ann,
it yourself.
Ann and I mentioned June was Nick Hornby month. And when Ann and I went down to Texas over Memorial Day weekend, and on the way back, we listened to the audiobook version of Nick Hornby's latest novel. It's called Juliet Naked. And there are three primary characters in that book. And so each of them had their own reader. And it was just thoroughly entertaining and satisfying to listen to that way.
See, you just can't get that.
No, you're not going to get that for a while out of text to voice on your iPad.
Only Roger Ebert.
or actually, it would be an appropriate way to read text from Stephen Hawking.
Oh yeah, that would be true. All right, real quick before we go into the last segment of the show, which is what we're consuming. I figured I'd get this out of the way first. You can contact us at comments@nashvillefeed.com. NashvilleTechFeed.com is where you find the show notes, all the information about the people on the show and everything we talk about. It is a wiki, so therefore, if you're listening and you're bored, you can add to it and help us.
Let's not encourage that all that much, because you know the people who are listening, and they will make comments. I just doomed myself to massive wiki defacing on my page. Okay, never mind. Move on.
And in fact, we have the phone number, which is 615-280-0505. So, Lucas, we got zero voicemails this week. So,
well, it's been a busy time for our fan.
And, I guess we have two.
Hi, Beth. Shout out to Beth.
Our other fan, who I won't shout out to, but because
why not?
Because I'll be shouted at for doing that. But
disclosure:
if you are listening, please thank you for your time and your attention, and please help us spread the gospel of the Nashville Tech Feed through your various the Twitters. and Facebooks, and if you still have Facebook accounts, and all of your social networking avenues, because we can use all the help we can get.
I still have Facebook, and Nashville Tech Feed is on Facebook, but I don't push to it. I only pull, and that's another conversation.
That's what Steve said. No, wait, that's
no. You're holding it wrong.
You're holding it wrong. That's what Steve said.
Yeah.
All right. So what we're consuming, the final segment of every Nashville Tech Feed show, where we share what we're consuming, being music, audio, audiobooks, real books, e-books, video games, so on and so on and so on.
Lucas, go ahead.
I very quickly just jotted on the notes page that we share in putting this thing together. I've basically this past week spent a ridiculous amount of time on Godfinger, which I talked about last week or last time. More time than I really care to admit watching World Cup games, and then having my, you know,
disappointed,
my heart broken on Saturday in overtime. Or what their version of overtime is, but then again, Sunday morning, found myself turning it on again for England and Germany. So I'll probably stick with it until the final, and then not watch soccer again for another 4 years.
I tried to watch the World Cup while I was visiting my family up in Chevy Chase, Maryland, and every morning started out with the sound of the house being filled with a million bees.
Yes.
And then the day of the tennis match, I can't forget the two players. We were going back and forth between tennis and the soccer. And every time we went back to the soccer, it was like, can we please watch the tennis?
Although, have you noticed? I don't know if you've been on YouTube in the past week or so. They have a Vuvuzela button on most new videos, where it doesn't matter what it is. You can press, actually it's in the shape of a soccer ball. You click that button and it will overlay the sound of Vuvuzelas over whatever audio track of whatever video you're watching.
There is a special place in hell for whoever came up with that.
Yes.
The best thing I heard about the Vuvuzelas was it was the takeoff on the MasterCard ads, and it was something like the cost of flying to South Africa $2,000, cost of outfitting your team $10,000. The cost of building a stadium and hosting the World Cup, $1.2 billion. Having your entire billion-dollar World Cup destroyed by a 10-cent horn from China, priceless.
it kind of goes back to the there's the other old joke about any number of musical instruments, but what's the definition of perfect pitch when the Vuvuzela doesn't hit any of the sides of the dumpster when you throw it in.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. You can use that for banjos, accordions, whatever, but I think we're all lined up with the Vuvuzela hatred by now.
Oh,
so that's me. That's what I'm doing.
At least the World Cup season doesn't last as long as the basketball season.
Do we have a winner this year? I'm not quite sure.
In basketball?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the Lakers, I believe.
Like I said, did we have a winner this year?
Well,
yeah, all I gotta say Dave, is basketball is a sport played with five people per set. Never mind.
All right. So me, I've been this. Like I say, this has been Nick Hornby month. I've done 3 Nick Hornby novels this month. 2 of them as audiobooks. That was Juliet Naked that I referred to earlier, and then on this last trip that I was on, I listened to an earlier book called Slam, and enjoyed both of those. And then at the same time I was listening to Juliet Naked, I started reading High Fidelity on my iPad. I think I used the Kindle app on my iPad. And then I, after I had read the book, I downloaded the movie and watched it on my iPad. And found there was some criticism that the movie was not faithful to the book, but I thought it was a pretty faithful recreation. They did move it from London to Chicago. I would have rather seen it in London myself. But so
I don't know. Did you really want to hear John Cusack try to do an English accent? That would have been bad.
No, but I could see Hugh Grant in the role.
Possibly, sure.
Possibly. I'm sure there are lots of English people who could have played the role without faking an English accent. So I mentioned Dierks Bentley. I'm very enamored of his new bluegrass twin-tinged album, Up on the Ridge. And I think his rendering of U2's Pride in the Name of Love is just a knockout. To hear what is reminiscent of Edge-style guitar riffs done on a mandolin, it's priceless.
I still haven't heard that yet. I need to, especially with that endorsement. When you think about how simple the Edge's guitar parts are, so much of his mystique comes in his in the sounds and the processing and the signal.
Yeah, yeah.
And to hear it broken down like that on an instrument like that, I'm looking forward to it. Now I gotta go search that out.
It's compelling the way they've captured the groove of that song with the acoustic instruments, because when the first time I heard it, I'm hearing this groove, and I recognize this groove, but it's all with mandolin chops and acoustic guitars and a stand-up bass, and I couldn't place it until the lyric kicked in. But that was just another dimension to the whole experience, was how they managed to capture that groove with the acoustic instruments. And then my last note will be an endorsement. If you have not seen it yet, run, don't walk down to the theater and see Toy Story 3.
Is it in 3D?
Yeah, it's in 3D. I've seen it in 3D and 2D. It's not the kind of movie that needs to be in 3D. The first time I saw it was in 3D. Then I saw it over the weekend with Ann in standard 2D. It's the opposite of Avatar, where Avatar was all about the 3D technology and being immersed in that visual experience with what was really a kind of a weak story. This is the exact opposite. This is what you go to movies for. This is the kind of story that reaches in and touches your heart, and all the special effects are secondary.
We'll have to check it out. We've been waiting to use our movie passes. Everything we wanted to see is like no passes.
Go ahead and see it in 3D. It's enjoyable in 3D, but it's not necessary to enjoy it. I would say that Avatar was all about going to IMAX and seeing it in the giant immersion experience. This is about the story and how it touches your heart.
Now, one thing I have to say is the Avatar transfer to Blu-ray, amazing.
Oh, yeah?
It was a that's the most crisp Blu-ray movie I've ever seen.
Well, it's because everything's already blue, so that probably set out
it.
Quite a bit.
Stop it. All right.
What are you consuming, Dave?
Not a whole... Well, it's called Yuengling Light. Not officially endorsed by the Nashville Tech Feed. I am... You know, I haven't been reading a whole lot. I'm reading Beginner's Guide to JavaScript because that's the direction I'm trying to go, is a little bit more programming. It's Beginner's Guide to JavaScript by John Pollock. I'm also consuming, trying to organize my life with a little application called Things.
Tell us about that.
Things is an app for the Mac, the iPad, and the iPhone. And what it is pretty much a task management software. It's beautiful for the iPad. I mean, it's simply beautiful. It's beautiful on the Mac. It's beautiful on it. And the workflow is really nice.
And are they all linked together through a cloud service?
No. And I got that for a specific reason. I checked out, was it Remember the Milk?
Yeah.
Didn't like it. I didn't like the interface. It felt clunky to me. And one of the things I did like about Things is that every time you open the app, if you're in the Wi-Fi and the other one's running, they all sync up. So the minute I fire it up on my iPad and it's up on my Mac now, it'll instantly sync the minute I launch it. I launch it on the iPhone in the same Wi-Fi. It instantly syncs. So
if all the devices are open and on in the same space, they will sync. But they don't have a remote cloud syncing thing like Remember the Milk?
Not at this time.
Because if I'm in a coffee shop and I make a change to Remember the Milk on my iPhone, when I get home to the desktop or the laptop, that change is already there.
Yeah.
And that Things doesn't do that. I looked at another one today called Tasks for iPad, and it looks like you're describing Things. It looks like a much more robust task manager than Remember the Milk, which doesn't even have an iPad app yet.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have the cloud syncing function, which is really valuable, I think, for what I do.
Yeah, for what you do, since I'm pretty much with my iPad and my Mac pretty all the time and my phone, it wasn't a deal breaker. The hardest thing to swallow about Things, that sounds really bad, hard to swallow Things, is that it's expensive. The iPad app is $20.
Oh,
the
wow.
iPhone app is $10, and the Mac app is $49.
Okay, so, I'm just going to say that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
you're up to like $60 to across three apps, and you can't sync them outside of Wi-Fi?
The price was more of a deal breaker. I haven't bought it on
I would have taken that money and gone see Toy Story.
Well, here's the thing. I really like it. I think it might be the first task management software that I'm going to continue to use.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was the important thing. I tried using Remember the Milk, couldn't get into it. I just couldn't keep up with it. The interface on it just didn't keep me working. So like on the Mac, you can do a keystroke with with Quicksilver, you can do, set up control. If you hit control and spacebar, it pulls up the Quicksilver functionality. Same thing with Things. You can do a keystroke and it automatically bring up an instant new note. New tasks that you can create.
Well, it would work for me perhaps if I just used the iPad. And here we go, come back to the conversation about the trifurcation of tasks around this trinity of devices. If I only used the iPad as my task manager, but mm-hmm. in fact, I'm actually doing other things with the iPad and don't want to go switching back and forth to keep track of tasks, I seem to be doing that now with the iPhone. So
yes, yeah. I just keep.
I'll have to take another look at it. Do you have any idea if they're planning at some point to add a cloud-based service to their capability?
I would suspect it because that's where it's going.
Yeah,
they are due for a new version, from what I understand. I'm not quite sure. Like I said, I just started using it a couple days ago. I got a 15-day trial, so I haven't bought in fully yet. If anything, I've got it for my iPad and iPhone. That might be enough for me. Because that's what I have with me in meetings when I need to keep track of what I'm doing. So
mm-hmm,
my iPad
mm-hmm.
really is the extension of my screen.
Yeah.
So
okay, I'll check it out.
So the final thing I have is a game called Portal. It came out in 2007 or 2008, and it is the most fascinating game I've played in a very long time.
Portal.
PORTAL.
Uh-huh.
It's out for Steam which means you can get on your Mac, your PC, for your play. I played it on the PlayStation, but the whole premise of the game is you're in a laboratory with a psychotic computer that puts you through these skill tests, pretty much. The only weapon you have is a portal. You shoot one, goes in, and shoot one, it comes out somewhere. And the entire purpose of the game is to escape from this computer laboratory. And I love challenging games like that. And it kept me riveted to the very end. I played it and beat it in 2 days. It's a very short game.
It won't be out as soon as it talked about skills.
But yeah, so if you're anybody out there, check out Portal. It's not a big investment. You can set it down and come back. It's not one of those games that you'll forget where you are. It's one phase at a time. And that's pretty much what I've been up to. So this comes to the end of our podcast. And as always, guys, thank you very much. Lucas, where can we find you online?
Same old places. Twitter.com/TuneInLucas and LargeLandMammal.com, which I finally, after many, many attempts and threats, gave a little refresh because of the newly discovered template editors within Blogger.com. So move some stuff around, change a few colors. It's still my blathering for good or ill.
Very good, very good. Paul, where can we find you?
I am these days Driver49. I'm Driver49 on Twitter. My website that I've been focusing most of my work on these days is cohesionarts.com.
Very good. And my name is David Baranja. You can find me at davidbaranja.com or nashvilletechfeed.com or Twitter, mdave. Yeah, twitter.com/mdave. And as always, you can leave us a message at, what's the phone number, Lucas? You don't remember.
I'd say it, but I keep getting drowned out by ringtones. Oh. I believe 615-280-0505.
That is correct.
Yeah. Ram it into my skull. And hopefully the ones of our fans as well.
The two of our fans?
Our fans. F-A-N-Z. We'll go that way.
And you know who you are.
And if you don't leave us a message,
don't bother denying it, because we've seen you talk about it on the Twitters.
Mm-hmm. One final note, the Nashville Tech Feed is part of the Tech Podcast Network. You can go to techpodcast.com/Nashville Tech Feed. So Lucas, I've got a way that we can get more people to interact with the show.
Above and beyond the weird noise that we'll end up playing at the end of this thing?
How about I offer a $5 iTunes gift certificate for somebody that calls in and leaves a voicemail of what that sound is. Where it is from.
And you know what? Paul and I will be eligible because we don't know what you're going to play. So once we finally... we only hear this, we'll call in and say, hey, that's the... And we probably won't know.
No, hold on. I have to set the computer up to say, asterisk, all hosts on the Nashville Field Nashville Tech Feed that have appeared on as a host or appeared on it previously are not all eligible.
Or anyone that we might potentially ask to be on the show at any given time in the near future.
That would eliminate, like, our two listeners. All right, so we're going to end the show, Lucas, with... Ready? Here we go.
New technology permits us to do very exciting things in interactive, erotic software. Wave of the future, dude. 100% electronic.
Well, I still jerk off manually.